Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. Hoo-wah! I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. We all know about the war going on in Israel. Israeli citizens were attacked by Hamas terrorists. A lot of civilians were killed, others taken as hostage. Some of the hostages were Americans. I can't think of a time in history when Americans were taken hostage, and we knew about it, when our government didn't take actions, including at least the threat of military action, to get them free. I'm glad that we're standing with Israel, but I wonder why we're ignoring our hostages taken and held by the terrorists. On the other hand, our government is not taking any action to end the use of the legal system to persecute and prosecute conservatives. The recent conviction of President Trump is a perfect example of a corrupt legal system. Joining me to 50 caliber microphone today is Marine vet Skip Coriel. I've heard that road rage in Chicago sometimes includes shooting. Have you heard that, Skip?
Yes, Colonel, I have heard that. And, you know, it's happening a lot in Chicago, but it's happening all over the country now. Road rage is rampant, as is other kinds of violence. And it's just people are very, very tense and upset and even a little bit angry about everything, the state of America. And boy, that's what happens with road rage. You need to calm down, relax, and just take a chill pill.
And you also have a better chance of arriving safely.
Yes, absolutely.
Here's what we have for you today. On News and Comment by the Colonel, I'm going to discuss how our schools and colleges are failing us. Then Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby will contribute his warrant wisdom. Then we'll talk with Vietnam vet and author Dave Hearn. Then Ben Sanderson from Gun Owners of America will discuss some inappropriate things going on in Washington that will hurt vets. Then Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby will return. He's also a pilot, and he'll discuss young eagles teaching kids to fly. And Navy vet Teresa Robinson will introduce another female veteran.
Hey, troops, please invite your friends to join us at this time on this great radio station. Then head on out to frontlinesoffreedom.com and sign up for our free e-newsletter. And join the conversation at facebook.com/frontlinesoffreedom.
We welcome your input to this show. Send us your ideas and comments through our website, frontlinesoffreedom.com, or by Facebook. Well, now it's time for news and comments by the Colonel on Frontlines of Freedom. Of course, we'll start with the news. Take us there, Skip.
Well, Colonel, Russia's offer to achieve a ceasefire with Ukraine by freezing battle lines is met with skepticism in the West. The seeming bid for peace comes when the war isn't going well for the Russians and comes ahead of a peace parley being readied at Switzerland. Putin's offer, through intermediaries, to achieve a Russia-Ukraine ceasefire by freezing battle lines in place is met with skepticism. Putin aides say that Putin, who started his sixth term last month, does not want to be stuck with a forever war. Analysts said that Putin made an offer to take the wind out of the sails of an 80-country Ukraine peace conference that President Zelensky is holding soon in Switzerland. Putin is not invited. Standing in some bombed-out ruins, Zelensky recorded a video appeal inviting the two world leaders who could make a difference, Presidents Biden and Xi of China. Putin's bid for peace comes as the war is not going well for Russia. Russia's dead and severely wounded toll, as calculated by Ukraine's defense ministry, topped 500,000. For comparison, the Soviet army lost 75,000 dead and wounded during its decade-long occupation of Afghanistan. Soviet Union had a population twice the size of Russia's.
Okay, a ceasefire does not end the war. A peace treaty does. It makes sense only if there's a peace treaty that is acceptable to both sides. One thing is for sure, Putin is not trustworthy.
And Russian troops are attempting to storm a key island after losing it to Ukraine just weeks ago. Moscow's forces have recently launched repeated assaults to recapture the tactically important Nestra Island. The island is located 12 miles southwest of the Ukrainian city of Kherson, which Ukraine liberated along with the west bank of the Dnieper River toward the end of 2022. Kiev's forces had regained control of the island in late April. Ukraine has since been launching regular raids across the Dnieper and reached the occupied side of the river last October after extensive cross-river operations. A Ukrainian spokesperson said that the island holds tactical significance because it prevents Russian troops from approaching Ukrainian positions. After a long pause, Moscow has begun to accumulate its forces in an attempt to storm the island, he said.
Russian forces are being outfought by Ukrainian military, but Russia's a much bigger nation. I'm glad more European nations are helping Ukraine now. I hope Russia quits this war soon, but their big necessity is to save face when they do it. We'll see.
And speaking of China, last month, a Hong Kong court found 14 pro-democracy activists guilty of conspiring to subvert the government, following the Chinese territory's biggest trial under a China-drafted 2020 national security law. The activists are among 47 pro-democracy activists arrested in 2021 for holding unofficial primary elections for Hong Kong's legislature in July 2020. Authorities said the elections undermined state power by securing a majority needed to veto budgets, which could have dissolved the legislature and forced its leader to resign. Hong Kong's current legislature has no pro-democracy lawmakers. Those convicted face up to life in prison. Roughly 300 people have been arrested under this law, which criminalized dissent in June 2020 after mass anti-government protests in 2019. In recent years, Beijing has asserted more control over Hong Kong, a special administrative region that was mostly autonomous from Communist Party control since the UK ceded it to China in 1997.
Yes, China is pure evil, and we need to ensure that their use of the legal system to punish those who disagree with them is stopped here in the United States. We can see that it has a presence here. You know, Republicans like President Trump are attacked and punished, while illegals who attack police officers are turned loose. It's time to go back to our original values and standards.
And the Israeli military confirmed that its forces are operating in central parts of Rafah in its expanding offensive in the southern Gaza City. Israel launched its ground assault into the city on May 6, triggering an exodus of around 1 million Palestinians out of the city and throwing UN humanitarian operations into turmoil. Still, it has yet to amount to a major operation, according to our State Department. Biden said that Hamas is no longer capable of carrying out another large-scale attack on Israel and urged the Israelis and Hamas to come to a deal to release remaining hostages for an extended ceasefire. He said Israeli officials have offered a three-phase deal to Hamas, adding, "Israel has made their proposal. Hamas says it wants a ceasefire. This deal is an opportunity to prove whether they really mean it." Ceasefire talks ground to a halt after a major push by the U.S. and other mediators to secure a deal in hopes of averting a full Israeli invasion of Rafah. Israel's recent statement suggests its forces have been operating in most parts of the city. At first, their assault focused on Rafah's eastern districts and in areas close to the border with Egypt. Israeli troops seized the Rafah crossing into Egypt on the first day of the offensive and have claimed control over the Philadelphia Corridor, a road running the length of the Gaza-Egypt border on the Gazan side. This past week, Israeli troops moved into Rafah's western district of Tal al-Sultan, where heavy clashes with Hamas fighters are reported. Israel said its troops in central Rafah uncovered Hamas rocket launchers and tunnels and dismantled a weapons storage facility.
Israel is doing what it should be doing to take out its declared enemy. That's easy.
And recent joint British-U.S. airstrikes in Yemen killed at least 16 people. The airstrikes were targeting Yemen's Houthi rebels and wounded at least 42 others. The strikes were in response to attacks on shipping vessels in the Red Sea by Iran-backed militant groups protesting the Israel-Hamas war. Iran has funded Houthi rebels in Yemen, Hamas in Gaza, Hezbollah in Lebanon, and other groups in Iraq and Syria.
The Houthi rebels are terrorists and should be attacked and destroyed as often as they're located. I'm glad we're finally doing that. And that's the news. As Americans, it's our responsibility to ensure that our nation is well-run and on the right path. Politics and politicians are confusing. We can work together. Concerned Veterans for America can assist you, even if you're not a veteran, in getting involved and getting our nation back on track. Working with them is one of the things I do. Check cvafrontlines.com. That's cvafrontlines.com. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. Coming up on Frontlines of Freedom, I'll share some comments by the Colonel and we'll enjoy some war wisdom. Then we'll talk with Vietnam vet Dave Hearn. At ease, troops, take a break. It's that time of the year again. The U.S. Mint is making their new 2024 American Silver Eagle and American Gold Eagle coins, and there's no better time to shore up your investment in precious metals than now. Call Universal Coin and Bullion at 800 UCB Gold to get great prices on the finest gold and silver coins of the year. I work with Universal Coin and Bullion because they're a company that you can trust. So give them a call at 800 UCB Gold. That's 800 UCB Gold, or check them out at universalcoin.com/Denny.
This is Marine Vet Skip Coriel with your home defense tip of the week. According to the National Sexual Violence Resource Center, 80% of rape victims knew their attacker. Be careful who you let into your life. If they don't feel right to you, then don't associate with them. My experience has taught me this. When you let crazy people into your life gets crazy. This is just one more way to keep your family safe. For more useful tips on home and personal defense, visit homedefenseshow.com.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. It's 20 minutes after the hour, and you're in formation and listening to the Front Lines of Freedom all across America. Troops, if our economy wasn't a mess with inflation going crazy and prices going way up out of sight, I'd still recommend you do some investing in precious metals, gold and silver. I encourage you to join me in purchasing these solid investments from Universal Coin. Find them at universalcoin.com/Denny. That's universalcoin.com/Denny. Now it's time for comments by the Colonel. Why would anyone want to risk his or her life to protect someone or something they don't love and respect? I sure wouldn't. Yet, a great many of today's youth are not being taught any real history of our nation and are being taught that our nation is a bad place that treats people poorly. And they're being taught that our Judeo-Christian values and ethics are wrong. So why would any of them want to join our military, perhaps to lose their lives while defending this nation? You may have noticed that our military is having serious problems recruiting. Many of we Americans have viewed with dismay the recent anti-Semitic protests at universities across our nation. This raises the question, don't these students know anything about history? Too often, the answer is no. In his 1989 farewell address to the nation, President Reagan prophetically warned about the consequences of neglecting the teaching of history. He said, quote, "If we forget what we did, we won't know who we are. I'm warning of an eradication of the American memory that could ultimately result in an erosion of the American spirit," end quote. It was that spirit that led millions to fight against the evils of Nazi Germany and its extermination of over 6 million Jews, leading to the liberation of the concentration camps this less than a century ago. That spirit has been lost as we see the grandchildren of those who fought for that freedom are now calling for the persecution of those who their ancestors valiantly fought to liberate. But as George Santayana wrote in The Life of Reason, those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. And on university campuses across our land, history is being repeated by those who don't know it. What Santayana and President Reagan both understood is that having a historical sense, a grounding in what has come before, is essential both in the individual level and on the societal level to bring civilization and order from the chaos of our perceptions and passions. If we have no historical sense, we're swept along by events and dominated by our reactions to those events, we're ruled by our emotions. Studies show how woefully ignorant current generations are of history. For example, a 2015 report by the Newsom Institute found that 43% of American adults did not know the First Amendment gave them the freedom of speech, and a full third couldn't identify any rights guaranteed by the First Amendment to our Constitution. And it's that Constitution that we vets took an oath to support and defend, and many folks, maybe even vets, don't know what it says. I taught American government for 15 years in college. The first day of class, I'd ask, why do we celebrate the 4th of July? Some students said it was Independence Day, and it is. But when I asked them what happened on that day, in 15 years, I had one student who knew. That's a negative report about both the school system and the parents. No surprise, the American Council of Trustees and Alumni found that in a survey of over 1,000 liberal arts colleges, only 18% included a course in U.S. history or government as a graduation requirement. So those without this knowledge can't view history in context. They can't balance their perceptions with insight of what may really be happening. And as a result, they get caught up in the same vicious cycles that have brought down civilizations for over 1,000 years. And if history is taught at all, rather than being taught historical facts, students are told to interpret it, Well, these interpretations are only based on the viewpoint of the interpreter. Hey, how can one interpret something one has little or no knowledge of to begin with? Therefore, when there's no historical context to draw upon, people aren't equipped to refute an argument, lacking critical thinking skills, or to see beyond our rhetoric. They become easy prey for the demagogues to be exploited and to advance their agenda. The nature abhors a vacuum, and if the absence of teaching real civics and history at all levels of our education system, radical activists are using that space to indoctrinate our children into the wrong and dangerous worldviews. The latest worldview is that Israel is evil and should be destroyed, and the demagogues, have preyed upon the ignorance of these students who have no knowledge of the past to achieve these goals. It's scary that the very arguments being made on our university campuses are way too similar to the ones made in Germany back in the 1930s, which led to one of the most evil human tragedies in history, a tragedy that these students seemingly either have no knowledge of or context to understand. And this is, of course, also why our nation has increasingly become a house divided against itself, a house that Abraham Lincoln, quoting Jesus Christ, warned us cannot stand. Jarrett Stepman of the Heritage Foundation put it best when he wrote, quote, "We don't want to be trapped in the past, but we do want to learn from it in order to avoid repeating the same mistakes and to build a better future," end quote. Unfortunately, we are reaping the ignorance that we have sown by either ignoring history or reinterpreting it into something that never was. What's happening on our university campuses is only the latest symptom of a greater problem. The same is true of current civil discourse. Let's take action now and teach true and detailed history before that problem comes another human tragedy. We need to have a military full of troops who love our nation and will, if necessary, die to protect her. We don't have a minute to lose. And those are my comments for today. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. You're listening to Frontlines of Freedom. Now we get to enjoy some warrant wisdom with Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. What do you have to share this week, Roland?
Colonel, last weekend, 80 years after Allied forces launched the massive D-Day invasion, veterans and civilians leapt out of C-47 aircraft in the skies above Normandy. The jump was meant to mimic the same jump that Allied soldiers made 8 decades ago. Although D-Day itself was on June 6, 1944, the jump on June 2nd was to be an opening event of a week-long commemoration in remembrance of the invasion. The parachutists were ferried to Normandy by C-47s that took off from England, flew over the English Channel on the way to France. Two of those C-47s, named That's All Brother and Placid Lassie, were actually flown during D-Day, and they survived the war. Now, on the ground, there were groups dressed as Allied soldiers who rode around in World War II model cars and carried 1940s equipment. However, there was also modern-day aircraft and military equipment, including several UH-60 Black Hawk helicopters and even current military members that were jumping using modern parachutes. You know, there was also a lot of other events scheduled, including about 100 Marines coming ashore at Normandy to honor those who landed there on June 6, 1944. The German resistance was especially fierce at Omaha Beach, where U.S. troops suffered 3,600 casualties, including 770 that were killed. But the Allies were able to establish a stronghold on the continent, from which they would eventually break out and reach Germany itself. The landings on D-Day are considered some of the most revered operations in U.S. military history. Those 100 U.S. Marines were carried by landing craft and utility boats from the dock landing ship USS Oak Hill. Also, the cruiser USS Normandy with 300 sailors participated in ceremonies to mark the 80th anniversary. You know, for the past 80 years, there's been an enduring bond between Europe and the United States. We don't always agree on everything. But yet, we continue to stand united in deterring any threat that could jeopardize peace and security. For Frontlines to Freedom, I'm Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. Back to you, Colonel.
Thanks, Roland. I always enjoy your comments. Straight ahead on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll talk with Vietnam vet Dave Hearn. Then we'll learn about laws that could restrict veterans from owning firearms. All this is coming up. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. You're standing tall with the Frontlines of Freedom. I'll be right back. Troops, it's time for sit-ups. Do 50, then stand at ease.
From ensuring veterans get the care they deserve to ending our nation's endless wars, to targeting out-of-control spending, Concerned Veterans for America is taking on the most important issues facing America.
You can help CVA shape a better future for Americans everywhere. Visit CVAFrontlines.com to learn more and join the movement. That's CVAFrontlines.com.
Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to vetted veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code. Troops, welcome back to our nation's largest military veteran talk radio show, Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Troops, please do send me your comments and questions. Email me through frontlinesoffreedom.com. So it's an honor to welcome a fellow Vietnam vet and a guy who knows a whole lot about books, Dave Hearn. He's also spent a lot of time working with Universal Coin and Bullion. So we got a lot in common. So welcome to the show, Dave. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you, Danny, for having me here. So I guess you mentioned that you'd like to have me talk a little bit about my experience in Vietnam, which was way back in 1967.
Yeah. Start by telling us when and why you joined the military, and then take us there.
I joined the military because I got a letter from Johnson, and he said he needed me really bad. Well, I was actually at that particular time in Italy in a band, rock and roll band. And my father was in the Army. I was an Army brat. I was 19, 20, and 21 during the period I was there. I was out of high school, supposed to be going to the University of Munich, but the band was far more important to me than going to more school. So anyways, instead of actually just hopping on a plane and flying over to Fort Dixon, New Jersey, I actually went ahead and I actually joined the service right there at Camp Darby in Italy. And then, of course, the Army flew me over to Fort Dixon, New Jersey, instead of me paying my way. And so I just went through basic training, of course, and I went to learned a little bit about a Nike missile for a year. And then I got an OCS and got my commission, and then did a few things. Went to jungle warfare school down in, well, not Guatemala. Anyways, went to jungle warfare school down south. And Panama. Yeah. That was a very interesting period of time. Fun little trip. And then after that, they sent me over to Vietnam. And I was with the 1st Infantry Division. My first job was the 2nd and 28th. I was a forward observer, which was really, you know, when you think back and you try to remember things that happened, that's virtually those 6 months I spent with the 2nd and 28th Infantry as a forward observer are the memories that are there. In fact, it's just very few memories that I have of anything happened after those first 6 months, after, because my 6 months was terminated by a battle called the Battle of Zongbo 2 in June of 1967. And in that particular battle, it was a horrific battle that lasted only 3 hours, but a lot of casualties. We had 187 men killed or wounded during that short period of time. We actually had 37 men killed, 150 more wounded. And as an artillery officer, myself and three others that were there on the ground during that battle, we brought in over 8,000 artillery rounds in that three-hour period, which is a lot of noise. So that was the biggest battle that I had there. And it's sort of one of those things that, you know, stay with you forever. I did write a book about it. I'm not sure if you've seen it or not, but anyways, I wrote a book about the battle because I felt like it was a thing that I needed to get down so that people who read about Vietnam have something where they can see what some of these horrific battles were like. And it was, I think it was very good for a lot of the men who did survive the battle to be able to have something that they could show their children or wives or whatever. Or children could read about what their father did or their brother did or whoever was in that particular battle. I think it helped a lot of men, and I still get contacts from some of them that are still alive about the book and thanking me for having written it. You know it's really funny because us Vietnam veterans are basically the last of the
old guys,
last of the soldiers. Yeah, of the old soldiers. Yeah, I mean, you're talking about the men who fought in the Second World War. I mean, they would be over 100 years old, virtually most of them now, if they were alive at all. And then the Korean War, they're got to be like 95, 96, 97, 98. So it's we're the ones now that are being weaned out, you know, and it's really sad because my boss, Captain Sartell, who was during that period, he was the company commander. He just died a couple of years ago, and that was very distressing to me that I've lost this guy that I had fought alongside, who was to me a great guy. And luckily, I still have a few of them that I still have contact with that are people that I truly, respect and have, great respect for, really. So
and maintaining that relationship, that's critical. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Dave Hearn about his time in Vietnam. Dave, just to make things clear to the people who didn't know what an FO is, you're a forward observer, you were an artilleryman, and you and your team, you mentioned how many artillery rounds you brought in. That was your primary mission, and it was, I suspect, you stayed quite busy doing that.
Yeah, during that battle, Sartell, myself, and our three RTOs, ran around, and that's why I say he was such a great guy, because if I had been there and he had not been my boss, I probably would have laid on the ground and did all my firing from one location. But with him, he was running from 1st Platoon, 2nd Platoon, 3rd Platoon, and we'd get up and we were in a clearing in this particular Battle of Zong Bo Tu. And we were actually about 450 men. We had 1st 16th, two companies from 1st 16th had just marched in. We had just marched in also. And we were two companies, Alpha Company and Bravo Company. And none of us were set up. We were just sort of milling around in the middle of the clearing and waiting for this colonel to tell us what changes he had made that now that he was there, where he wanted all of us to be. We were supposedly up in the Northwest Quadrant, but we weren't sure whether he still wanted us there or not because he had already set up another company there. So when they attacked us, we had no true plan of how we were going to defend ourselves because we were just sort of there. And unfortunately, a lot of the soldiers, we had been in a swamp before called Elsie Roof, which was named after Rufus Lazelle, who was the colonel who was in charge of the operation. But in that particular area that we were in at that time was a huge, nasty, nasty swamp. And so many of the men who had been there, they were soaked all the time and their feet were rotting away. It was just really bad. So when they got to this clearing, which was a beautiful clearing, it was, no longer were we in the swamp. We were up and it was just a big old clearing. And so some of them took off their boots, trying to dry out their feet, and they were cleaning their rifles and reading their letters that they had read about 20 times already, but we're going to read them again, eating some sea rations and waiting for us to tell them where to go and where to dig in and what to do. And that's when the battle started. So we were totally unprepared. We were just sitting there like sitting ducks. And they were about anywhere from 800 to 2,000 men who were firing at us. We have no idea exactly what the true number were, but they were all around us. They had us surrounded. They were the 271st from the North Vietnam Regiment 271st. And Yeah, and they were a very powerful group. I mean, they had mortars, they had rockets, they had machine guns, heavy machine guns, and they had us surrounded. That was the worst thing, is that, you know, we had no idea how to get out of it other than to fight like hell, and that's what we did. But again, like I said, we sustained a heck of a lot of casualties during that period of time.
Indeed. There's more to discuss about Dave's story, and he is going to stay with us. This is Colonel Denny Gillen on Frontlines of Freedom. Yeah, it's push-up time. I want you to do 103 push-ups. That's how many I do, well, a few times a week. Then take a break, but stay in the area. Dave and I will be right back.
Fresh, flash, frozen from the American farmer every time. PatriotFoods.com, hit the shop now button. You're supporting a veteran family in need every time you shop. Look at us online, see how we give back. For the servicemen and women of this great country, we are fighting for the American farmer. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM, 10% off today, folks. Shop now.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. I buy Patriot Foods. It's great. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM.
This hour of Frontlines of Freedom is brought to you by HelpVet.net. HelpVet.net is an online resource and information center dedicated to the welfare of those who have sacrificed for the freedoms, ideals, and morals we Americans hold dear to our hearts. At HelpVet.net, find information on benefit-related issues from education, healthcare, military pay, retirement, VA loans, and resources on education, finance, legal, health and wellness, the military life, moving and housing, travel and entertainment, and much, much more. Visit HelpVet.net, HelpVet.net.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. This is the final formation for this hour on Frontlines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation with Vietnam vet Dave Hearn. We were talking about the big battle that was, in fact, the focus of his entire tour in Vietnam. So, Dave, you guys took a lot of casualties, but you imposed a lot of casualties. And when it was over, what was it like?
Well, when it was over, I'd got hit in it myself. And the weird thing is, of course, I didn't even know I had been hit until someone told me I was bleeding. So, and my Kilo, my RTO, he also got shot in the arm, and he didn't know he was hit either, which is really, you know, one of those strange things. You're so involved in the battle, and those minor pains just don't even hurt because you're smashing yourself on the ground as you're running. So at the end of the battle, we had to stay there for another day. We couldn't get all the casualties out. And the bodies just stayed there, which was one of the really terrible things. We had about 30 men stacked up in one corner. And it's a rainy, hot period during June there. So you can imagine how quickly things went bad with those bodies. To me, it was a very emotional thing. I was very upset with what had happened. I think everybody was. You know, we actually felt like our bosses way above us had done a very stupid thing because they had us march into that particular clearing instead of flying us in with choppers. So we were very unhappy with that. And we felt like if we'd been flown in by choppers, we would have probably devastated the area first with artillery, you know, but we didn't. I had walk-in fires when I came in, but that wasn't going to be anything that was going to really deter Viet Cong from attacking us. That was just going to give me a reference point to shoot if we had been attacked, where I would have some idea where my rounds were landing. But it was a very emotional thing. You know, men were mad, men were dead, men were wounded, and everyone went wherever they had to go. We all, the units, three of the units were broken up to the point where they didn't exist any longer. They had to be rebuilt. Alpha, 1st, 16th, totally decimated. Bravo, 1st, 16th. And Bravo versus 2nd to 28th, those three units had too many casualties and had to be rebuilt. And that was a terrible thing. So basically, I stayed in for a few more years. I stayed in a total of 13 altogether, part of it being reserved, and then I got out. And then I got into the other kind of businesses. You mentioned Universal Coin and Bullion. I built software for them. I'd actually got very involved in it in the 80s and taught myself how to program, but I did a really great job of teaching myself and got to the point where I was writing books on how to program and actually doing seminars all across the country on programming concepts. And it was a 5-day seminar, in fact, that was really, something that I was very surprised that so many people would come to these seminars. The government was sending people, companies were sending people. And so we usually had like 25 to 35 people at each one of those seminars, which was at that time, for me, it was a great, great number. And I couldn't even believe the fact that after a while, I pretty much had all the lessons that I was teaching memorized. So, I just know going from this day to that day, what I was going to be saying the next day, even though I didn't have a book that, was supposed to be my guide that I had written. But it's just one of those weird things where you just start sort of memorizing the next hour, the things you're going to talk about.
Makes sense.
I met those people. They came to one of my seminars, Universal Coin and Bullion, and wanted me to come out and help them create some software to run their company. And that's what I did. So went up there and worked with them for quite a few years, working with some other companies too, but they were my primary company that I worked with.
Okay. This sort of gives us a background, but my recollection is that one of your major focuses now is on books.
Yes, it is.
Helping people. Talk about that, because there's a number of people that are thinking, that I know of, that are thinking about publishing, might use some insight. Talk about that part of what you're doing now.
Yes. Well, since I had written a few books, I really, and I love reading books. I'm addicted to that, both physical books and audiobooks. Anytime I'm driving somewhere, I'm listening to an audiobook. And not even sure why we started it, but we started a business quite a few years ago that would actually review people's books and get them out on this website that we had called authorsreading.com. Actually, what we wanted the site to be was one where authors read parts of their book to the public. But it didn't work out that way. In fact, we had very few authors who wanted to do that. But so we actually started doing written reviews, and we wrote a lot of reviews, and we interviewed authors too, like you're doing with me. But the real push was to do book reviews of any type of author out there, really. Some were actually published by major companies, some were just self-published. And we came across a lot of great, great books. Anyways, the company just got bigger and bigger, and now we do over 1,000, 200,000, 300 books a year that we're reviewing. And on top of it, we have another deal that we do. We give out awards each year to what we consider the top books that we received for that year. And which I think I mentioned to you before, the top nonfiction books for the last 2 years were, in fact, books written by Vietnam veterans, which I have no influence on, by the way. The winners are picked by a formula that we created to determine, which book should win based upon readership and their ratings on various platforms. And also, of course, what we do think of it, but much of it has to do with things that we have no control over, which is how well they are being accepted by the people out there, the readers. And I was really happy about that. I think I gave you a name of one of them that, happened that one. And I love that these books are being, and they are about the war. These books were winning were, in fact, about what they experienced during the Vietnam War. So people still have a lot of interest in that because their readers were many. When you have a couple thousand reviews, that represents many, many, many more. That, that person, yes, may have had 20,000 readers for their book or more. In fact, the first couple of months of my book, by the way, I was bringing a couple thousand dollars a month on the income off of Amazon. It's no longer that much that I bring in on that particular book anymore, but nonetheless, that was representing a lot of readers.
Yes.
And I was not as lucky as some of these authors, because I only have a little over 500 reviews. And like I said, these guys were in the couple thousands. So, and they had some really good stories too. I mean, one person was writing about what happened at the very, very end of the war and how their unit was treated and how it was sort of like almost forgotten. Your guys are out there, you're doing your stuff, and we're too busy trying to end this war to really care about what the hell is happening to you and your men. You have to take care of yourself. That was his overall feeling about how him and his unit was being treated by the Pentagon. But the kind of books we get are about everything. Vietnam is just was one of those things where I was surprised that we did get, you know, quite a few books in about Vietnam. But we get books in our mysteries, our children's books, all kinds of books. And some of them, we just got some books in about survivors of concentration camps in Germany, which was written by like a daughter of one of the survivors from the diary of like an Anne Frank type thing, where the diary of her, I guess it was her mother, had written about her survival in the concentration camp, which was basically based on the fact that she was a very attractive lady and one of the guards sort of fell in love with her, at least for maybe not true love, but lust. And you know, he would take her off, sneak her away, supposedly to do something with her. And really, they had their own little rendezvous outside the camp. And he kept her alive during that time, although he got himself in trouble. He was actually one of the doctors, and he got himself in trouble because they finally decided that they realized that he was having an affair with this Jewish woman, which was totally taboo, of course, for an officer to have an affair like that.
Okay. Well, you obviously cover all kinds of really cool books, and we're about out of time. How can listeners get in touch with you, plug in, get involved with you?
Well, our website is called authorsreading.com, and they can come to that. Now, if they do have books that all they want to do is not have a review, but just want us to see whether it's a book that could win an award, they can submit their book straight to Pencraft Book Awards. And you can go on Google and look that up, and you'll see that we have all kinds of good reviews. A lot of people have said great things about us. In fact, I don't think there's anything negative out there about us. And we just barely came back from Las Vegas, where we had a big ceremony giving out the awards to the winners from last year. And we'll do that again next year, and which was a lot of fun. And it was a seminar also. We did some talks about how to get foreign rights and things of this nature and how to use AI. That was another seminar that we had in Las Vegas during our book ceremony. So anyways, it would be the pencraftawards.com or authorsreading.com is the way to get in touch with us.
Sounds good. Thank you, Dave, for your excellent comments and for your service to our nation. Thank you for joining us today, bro. I appreciate you.
Thank you, Denny. Thanks for having me.
This concludes the first hour of the show. We'll start the second hour talking with Dave Sanderson from Gun Owners of America. Then Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby will talk about young eagles. And Navy vet Teresa Robinson will introduce to another female veteran. And of course, we'll conclude with our weekly mailbag, military history, and our self-defense report. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontline Freedom. Troops, it's time for pull-ups. Do 40 good ones, then maybe another 20 push-ups. Grab some protein, rehydrate with water. And finally, put a big smile on your proud-to-be-an-American face and send me your thoughts by email or on Facebook.